Welcome, everybody, to a special Thursday edition of the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the National Football League at BleacherReport.com, SportsOnEarth.com, and Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Brian.
Greetings.
A special Thursday edition of Brian, if you will.
I am definitely different on Thursday than I am on Wednesday.
Oh, yes. We had a few technical difficulties that prevented us from doing this on our typical Wednesday night, so I hope you all are bearing with us here. Granted, we will be making our week 7 minute picks later on, but you could probably take our Thursday night picks and toss them away already, because chances are you won't be listening to this before tonight's game, but you might be.
We're squeezing it in before the kick.
You never know.
You know, I'm just saying, like, as far as a pick is concerned, you know, it's relevant. As long as you get it in before the game starts, it should be relevant.
It should be relevant. At least it's relevant to us. It might not be relevant to you, the listener. So,
well,
regardless, that's only going to take a minute of our time.
It's their opportunity to see, like, right off the bat, how we're going to do this week.
Good point. So it is week 7 in the National Football League, and we have 5 teams that are undefeated to this point. This is the first time this many teams have gone undefeated since the 1970 merger.
Wow.
And more interestingly than that is that 3 of those 5 teams are on bye this week.
Well, I just want to point out that the Lions have done their part to contribute in that by losing the first 5 games. Just so that way, you know, that helps those other teams that have, you know, never mind.
Well, only one of those teams played Detroit, so.
I'm just saying that you can't have 5 undefeated teams unless, like, there's a bunch of bad teams, too.
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, you've got the Lions with 1 win. You've got the Kansas City Chiefs with 1 win, for example. So, of course, if you've got 5 teams with undefeated records, you obviously have at least 5 others in a bad way. So I want to talk about these 5 teams. I want to talk about whether we can consider these all contenders or if we have any pretenders in the bunch. We've got, of course, the 5-0 New England Patriots, the 5-0 Carolina Panthers. Both of these teams already had their bye weeks. The 6-0 Cincinnati Bengals, 6-0 Denver Broncos, and 6-0 Green Bay Packers, all on bye this week. Let's start with the Carolina Panthers. They pulled off the win against the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle last week, a major statement win for a team like Carolina, because even though this Seahawks team, you know, they've got, what, 2 wins right now, definitely not the powerhouse of the last 2 seasons. You still gotta admit that going into Seattle and trying to beat this team is a difficult task.
Oh, I think that game said a lot about both teams, that you know, Carolina is should be considered a pretty legit team this year, but it also, you know, I think illustrated the fact that Seattle's not quite what they've been over the last couple years. So,
right.
But definitely impressive performance, especially that performance on Sunday was pretty impressive, and this whole season they've been rather impressive, especially Cam.
You know, and the thing that I do want to bring up, though, that you know, people might use as an argument against the Panthers being a real contender, even though they are undefeated, is if you look at the teams that they've played at Jacksonville versus the Texans versus New Orleans, at Tampa Bay, and then at Seattle, not a lot of powerhouse teams that they're up against here. But the bottom line is they took care of business against teams where if you are a good team, you should be able to take care of business against bad teams.
Well, and that was why the last Sunday's game was especially important, because Seattle was really the first legit team that they've played. Even though Seattle, again, is on a down year for them over the past few, and they only have 2 wins as of now, I still think that it says something, you know, that they went up to Seattle and won. Because you even though the situation is what it is in Seattle right now, you still have to be pretty good to go do that.
Right. And when you look at the way that Carolina is constructed as a team, and you look at the way Seattle's constructed as a team, Carolina essentially went into Seattle and beat Seattle at their own game. Because you're talking about a run-heavy team, a team with a good defense, play-action passing, and Carolina was the team to get it done, even though they were on the road. And most importantly, something I really want to talk about in terms of Cam Newton, is that, you know, he's lacking for weaponry right now. You know, his top two receivers are tight end Greg Olsen and Ted Ginn Jr. Mm-hmm. And those are the only guys on that team who have over 100 receiving yards this year. You know, there's six or seven or eight other guys who have single-digit catches and under 100 yards right now. But yet Cam Newton is you know, he's running play-action passing more often than any other quarterback in the league. He's succeeding at it more often than any other quarterback in the league. And that goes back to Carolina just having, you know, they're built as a run-first team that can do those play-action passes, take defenses, you know, get them off guard. And then when you add in the fact that Cam Newton is not just a play-action quarterback of a run-heavy team, he is part of that rushing offense. You know, it's him and Jonathan Stewart right now, and they're both really getting it done. And it's kind of incredible. You know, I wrote about Cam Newton and what the Panthers are doing on offense earlier this week for Sports on Earth. And one of the things that I kind of came away with is Cam Newton is a system quarterback. And I don't mean that in the, you know, in that insult way where people are game manager, system quarterback, this and that. But that Cam is a very specific quarterback with very specific skill sets as a passer, as a runner. And the Panthers built their offense around that skill set. They weren't trying to change Cam Newton into another being something he's not, sort of like how Washington has tried to do with RG3 in the past. They built an offense around his strengths. And because it's a system that's suited to him, and we're talking about a guy in his fifth year in the league, you can see that he can masterfully run this offense that is designed specifically for him. And it doesn't matter that Steve Smith went off to Baltimore last year. It doesn't matter that Kelvin Benjamin is out for the year with an ACL. They can still move the ball, get it done, throw the ball, run the ball, because Cam Newton is just doing his job so well at such a high level.
Yeah, and if they, you know, if they keep this up and keep playing the defense so well and keep running the ball like they are, and if they can have somebody like a Devin Funchess, you know, get his hands together by, you know, later in the season or something,
sure,
like that, or maybe Ted Ginn makes some strides or I don't know, but if they get a little bit more consistency out of the receivers or a little bit more production out of the receivers, it's going to make them very dangerous, because they're still going to stick to the run the ball and the play action, and that's going to make it especially tough, because play action, I mean, it's an old concept. But it's still one of the most effective in football.
Moving on to the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, a lot of people look at the Bengals, oh yeah, they're 6-0, but what happens when they go to primetime with Andy Dalton? What happens if they go to the playoffs with Andy Dalton? Are they going to win these key games? And something tells me that it's yes, that this Bengals team has turned the corner, is even better than the very good team that they've been over the past four seasons. And you know, because when you look at the teams that they beat, Oakland, San Diego, Baltimore, Seattle, and Buffalo, you know, you're talking about teams that have been struggling, like Baltimore and Seattle, but you're also talking about up-and-comers like Oakland. San Diego has played very solid football this year. Buffalo, of course, has as well. You know, they had the benefit of a Bills team led by E.J. Manuel last week, but that's still a really strong defense, and they went to Buffalo to face them and stared them down and won. And I think that when you look at the variety of opponent that they've taken on, been able to beat, and you look at how they've been doing it, playing very good defense, of course, being one of the top rushing offenses in the league, while also boasting, you know, Tyler Eifert, Marvin Jones, A.J. Green, you know, all Giovanni Bernard in the passing offense. You put all of these, Mohamed Sanu, you put all these things together, and what I've been crowing about all these years about the Bengals having one of the most complete and deep rosters in the league is finally coming to pass now. You know, you've got healthy Geno Atkins, advancing that pass rush. You know, you've got everybody on the same page offensively. You've got a really strong offensive line, and you put all these things together, and you look at the quality of opponents that they've taken on and beaten versus all the other undefeated teams, and I've come away most impressed with the Bengals so far.
Well, I mean, I'll say two things about the Bengals. I've been, and this is, you know, as a qualifier, I've been like following them for a while, been waiting for them to kind of take that next step and kind of position themselves amongst the top of the league, even though they've had stints there over the last few years. I'll say that as of October 22nd, you know, this is, of all those good starts that they've gotten off to, this is, they've looked the best this year than they have in any of those other years.
On a consistent basis.
On a consistent basis. They're you know, playing, you know, decent opponents very well. They look, like you said, very balanced, very complete. They're playing some of the best football in the league right now. As far as basically right up there with New England, I'd say, as far as some of the best football in the league. And but I'm still going to throw the caveat out there that I've been saying since the beginning of the season, I want to see him play at night. I want to see Andy Dalton do the thing that he struggled the most with in his young career, and that's play under the spotlight and in a night game and or a playoff game. And obviously, we're not going to get the playoffs till the end of the season, so. There is a night game on the schedule. It's a few weeks away, I believe, still.
They've got the Browns on a Thursday night.
In a couple weeks, yeah. So we'll see how that looks. And if they look – I win or lose that game, I don't care. I just want to see how they look because they've kind of – the wheels have kind of fallen off in the past when they're in that situation for some reason. And if they pass that test for me, even if they lose a game between now and then, I'll say that I'm officially on board. I'm not saying I'm far off board. I'm just like, you know, still a little hesitant to go there.
Week 8's going to be pretty tough for the Bengals, too, because when they come off their bye week, they are at the Pittsburgh Steelers on November 1st, and that's a game where Ben Roethlisberger is expected to be back under center for the Steelers. Steelers front seven has been playing, you know, some lights-out football lately. The secondary can still be exploited, and when you have all of those passing weapons like the Bengals do, I would expect somebody, A.J. Green, you know, Eifert in particular, because the Steelers' defense has really been struggling against tight ends this year, to have good games. But when you're talking about, you know, Roethlisberger coming back and being healthy, finally getting Antonio Brown work back into the mix, you know, the Steelers boast almost as many offensive weapons as the Bengals do. So can the Bengals defense defend against that, and can the Steelers defense defend against that? So I think that's going to be a really interesting matchup to keep an eye on. Moving towards the – well, let's talk about the Denver Broncos and the Green Bay Packers together for one reason and one reason only. One of these teams is not going to be undefeated come Week 8. They are both on their bye weeks this week, but they face off against each other in Week 8.
Uh-huh.
I would assume – you know, that game is in Denver, but I still would think that the Packers are going to do a better job just because – Denver's defense has really been carrying a lot of the load here. Peyton Manning has been a bit off. We all know he's getting older, the arm strength, this and that. You know, you have people saying this team is undefeated, and you have people saying should they be putting Brock Osweiler in instead of Peyton Manning on a team that is currently 6-0? Because they're not 6-0 particularly because of Peyton Manning. They're kind of 6-0 despite Peyton Manning in certain ways.
I wouldn't say it's despite. I wouldn't say
completely despite.
He's not single-handedly responsible for getting them to this undefeated situation, but
no.
At the same time, he's made plays. He's done things here and there. But yeah, he certainly hasn't looked like the Peyton that we've come to know and love.
And I think that's what's going to be difficult for Denver down the stretch as we get into the latter part of the season. You know, it gets colder. Peyton's older. He starts taking more and more hits. That's going to be interesting to see, you know, if that defense can continue to kind of compensate a little bit for that offense, if things start getting a little bit more tricky for this offense as it goes on throughout the season. Because, again, you look at Denver's opponents and the teams they've beat, Baltimore, Kansas City, Detroit, the Vikings, Oakland, and Cleveland. And they barely got out of Cleveland with a win last week in overtime. So you feel like Denver is inching closer to that first loss of the season. And the fact that they have to take on Green Bay next week almost makes it seem to me like it's inevitable that they'll lose that game. I wouldn't say inevitable, but the advantage to me definitely tips towards Green Bay.
Yeah, I'll just say that, you know, Green Bay has been riding that defense. And, you know, I think that's what makes that matchup super fascinating, is that, you know, Green Bay's look like one of the best offenses in the league, and Denver's look like one of the best defenses, and or at least the most opportune defense, because they've been able to capitalize on a lot of turnovers and just make plays, you know, and get their team the ball back, that sort of thing. So I think that's really what makes that a fascinating matchup. And I don't necessarily think this is a conversation of you know, who's going to lose first as much as, although this makes sense because they're going to play next time, but like, we're not necessarily just saying who's going to lose first of these. We're saying, you know, who do we think are legit teams that are going to be in it, you know, until the end of the year. And I think both of those teams are.
And then moving on to the New England Patriots, everybody, you know, it's kind of a consensus that the Patriots are the best team in the NFL right now. They're coming off of their bye week. They are hosting the New York Jets on Sunday. But when you look at the situation, so they handily defeated the Pittsburgh Steelers in week one. You know, they took care of business in Buffalo, at Buffalo. They hosted Jacksonville, which is going to be a terrible situation for the Jaguars to have to be in and try to win. But then we look at the last 2 weeks, winning at Dallas and at Indianapolis. You know, you're talking about a Dallas Cowboys team that didn't have Tony Romo or Dez Bryant. You're talking about an Indianapolis team that has struggled to protect Andrew Luck, has struggled to create on defense, especially pressure up front. And then you had, of course, that crazy play call and a lot of other strange things that happened in that game that kind of Indianapolis was in it, and then they just lost it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everybody looks at New England as the most legitimate of these five undefeated teams, but when you look at all of these teams' opponents, nothing really stands out to me more than maybe the Bengals in terms of they had the slightly higher quality group of opponents through these first 5 to 6 games than the other undefeated teams. But when you just look in general at most of these five undefeated teams, you know, early season schedules, kind of easy go of things. You know, on paper, it wouldn't look that way at first, but Baltimore's not a very good team. Two of these teams faced Baltimore. Three of these five teams took on Seattle. They're not very good. You know, a couple of these teams,
they don't have a good I hate saying that, especially we're only 6 games in now, and we're saying that Seattle's not very good just because they're 2-4. They're still a good team.
Two and four is a difficult hole to get out of. They have a lot of messed up problems on offense right now.
I'm not arguing that. I'm saying that they're still a pretty good team, and that their record isn't good. You can have that. You can have bad teams with good records. You can have good teams with bad records. I'm just saying that, like, they've had an issue in as far as they've lost the lead in the fourth quarter of every game this year. That to me is a good team that's not finishing games for some reason. I don't know what that is, but I hesitate to call them a not very good team right now.
But a team that keeps blowing leads in the fourth quarter and can't finish games is basically the description of the Cleveland Browns over the last 4 or 5 years, and you can't call them a good team then.
I think that's a fair point, and I think that my thoughts on the Browns over the last couple of years is that they're close to becoming a pretty decent team. They just need to figure out how to win those games, where Seattle, like, knew how to win those games. They just, for whatever reason this year, they're off to the start of blown games at the end, and I don't know why that is, but that's the way it is.
But you cannot deny that a common thread with three of these undefeated teams is that they took on Seattle.
The combined records of who they've played is not very impressive.
No, it's not very
impressive. I'll give you that.
You got Kansas City with a couple of these teams. You've got Baltimore with a couple of these teams. Seattle with a few of these teams.
Detroit.
And Detroit with one of these teams.
They just had Denver, so yeah, I was thinking something else.
So, you know, when you look at that, there are some common threads that, you know, these teams' schedules could easily get more difficult,
mm-hmm.
could get more difficult going down the line. And then we'll kind of see what their true colors are, because none of these five teams have really been tested, let's say.
Well, yeah, that's why we'll see, you know, obviously we'll see Denver and Green Bay face off next week. You know, we'll see the Bengals have to play the Steelers, as you mentioned. We'll see.
Carolina's got the Eagles on Sunday night this week.
That's at home. I still don't know what I think of the Eagles, honestly. But yeah, no, I agree. I mean, that's the way the season goes.
And the Jets are definitely be playing the Patriots tough this week, because that's what they do.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, the Patriots just look really tough right now. They look like they're just firing on all cylinders. And I mean, this is. What everybody that hates on the Patriots, and I'm not a Patriots homer, but I'm not a Patriots fan. I'm just, you know, an unbiased observer here. But everybody that was hating on the Patriots fans all summer and making fun of them for the whole controversy that happened, you had to expect this, that they were going to come out with murder in their eyes, trying to kill everybody in the league.
Absolutely.
And they've done it so far. So, you know, we'll see how long they can keep it up.
In other news around the league before we head into our Week 7 minute picks, There are conflicting reports about the future of Percy Harvin's career. The Buffalo Bills wide receiver hasn't played this year. He's got ongoing hip injuries. There are some reports that the compensating for the hip injury has resulted in a knee injury. A few reports are saying that Percy Harvin is contemplating retirement, though ESPN's Adam Schefter says that is not the case. Harvin did not travel to London, however, for this week's game between the Bills and the Jaguars. And Rex Ryan says he doesn't particularly know where Percy Harvin is right now. This is a guy who kind of erroneously early on in his career got the moniker of being injury prone because he missed a lot of time with migraines that were difficult for him to treat. And then once he did find a proper treatment plan for the migraines, then the other actual injuries started adding up, particularly things with his hips, knees, ankles, hamstrings. This is a very dynamic, talented football player who, I wouldn't be surprised if the thought of retirement has crossed his mind at some point this year, because it's just every step forward he seems to make, there's an attendant step or two backward in terms of his health and recovery. So it's just something to keep an eye on, especially considering the conflicting reports from numerous NFL insiders around the media.
That's always fun.
Tyrod Taylor, Bills quarterback Tyrod Taylor, sticking with the Bills. He is out for this week's contest against the Jaguars. They were thinking maybe he could go. He and EJ Manuel were splitting first-team reps on Wednesday to try to see if Taylor could be ready to play, but it looks like EJ Manuel will get his second straight start for the Bills. Question marks surrounding Titans quarterback Marcus Mariota. He suffered a sprained MCL, an injury similar to what Ben Roethlisberger suffered in week 3. He doesn't have the attendant bone bruise, which means a typical 2 to 4 week recovery time. They were hoping to get him out there on the field this week. He did suffer the injury last week and stay out there. He didn't look too great in that situation, but He did power through, but at this point he didn't work out. He didn't participate in practice at all today on Thursday, which definitely puts his status in doubt for Sunday, which means Zach Mettenberger would be taking over for him, whether this week or for a couple of weeks. Meanwhile, Pittsburgh Steelers are on their third quarterback of the season, Landry Jones getting the start this week against the Kansas City Chiefs. Mike Vick suffering a mild hamstring tear in the third quarter of a very poorly played game by him against the Arizona Cardinals last week. Landry Jones came in, completed 8 of 12 passes for 168 yards and 2 touchdowns, both of those being thrown to Martavis Bryant. This is a guy who at least knows the offense. But we'll see what happens when the defense is actually game planning for him, because Landry Jones is a guy who's been sacked numerous times in his preseason appearances, 18 total over 3 years, including 9 this year, while also working with first string offense during the preseason.
Well, hopefully the soldier can keep him upright.
Yes. Alejandro Villanueva will be taken over at left tackle, by the way, for the Steelers. Kelvin Beachum, left tackle, suffered a torn ACL against the Cardinals. His season is done, but he was in there playing more snaps than Landry Jones ended up playing in that game, because Beachum's injury happened before Vick's did. He only gave up one quarterback hurry and hasn't given up a sack in any of his preseason games this year. And he's played 73% of all of the Steelers' offensive preseason snaps. So maybe they have a little diamond in the rough here with Villanueva.
I just thought it was funny that during that game last week that, like, I mean, it's a great story how he, you know, went and did the tour duty and a couple of them.
Three.
And, like, so he's a very interesting story, but, like, I swear they mentioned it at least 3 or 4 times during the game.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like,
Well, there's all
they
kinds
ran
of,
out of notes or something.
There's all kinds of interesting stuff about Alejandro Villanueva. He was an offensive tackle at Army until 2008. In 2009, he was converted to wide receiver.
Went from tackle to receiver?
Yes, and then he served 3 tours of duty in Afghanistan and then joined the Philadelphia Eagles as a defensive end.
I did hear that. I remember that he was like a receiver and a defensive end, but I didn't realize he was a tackle first, and now he's back to tackle.
Right,
so.
And Mike Tomlin, the last year the Eagles and Steelers had some joint practices and things like that, and Mike Tomlin looked over at this 6'9", Because, I mean, he's
huge.
He's huge.
Yeah.
And was just like, who is this guy? And why is he playing defensive end? And then when he found out that he had a kind of an offensive tackle background, because Tomlin looked at him and said, what if he played offensive tackle? Mm-hmm. And then he found out he had that background, and he just was so intrigued he really wanted to find a way to get him in. And he did a really good job this summer. So it's going to be interesting to see, though, how he holds up, protecting a guy like Landry Jones, who is sack prone against the Chiefs' pass rush isn't particularly what it has been in the past. They only have 13
sacks
on the
year. They're still solid.
But they also have 90 quarterback hurries right now.
Yeah, I mean, just Houston is still doing his thing, and they still got Tom Ali, and that's, yeah.
Right, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens when you've got this left tackle and this new quarterback that's actually being game planned for. So that's something to keep an eye on.
Should be fun.
And finally, the NFL and the Jacksonville Jaguars have come to an agreement with London's Wembley Stadium, a 5-year extension on their deal to play games there. So that'll run through 2020. It's also possible, starting in 2016, that a team, I would assume that they would be earmarking the Jaguars for this at this point, that a team will play back-to-back games in London starting next year. So two London games for one team in back-to-back weeks is something that the NFL is considering. I would assume that if they started that next year, even if it isn't Jacksonville doing that every year, I would assume that they're going to start with Jacksonville just because the Jaguars and have played in London for so many years now.
Yeah, they just keep forcing the Jaguars down the Londoners' throats.
Essentially.
If you will.
Essentially. also, another thing worth noting, just to bring it up briefly, Miami Dolphins came off their bye week. They've got their new coach and managed to win 38-10 over Tennessee. So we have to see if, maybe this Dan Campbell spark.
That's the question. And I called it last week when we were doing our picks. I said, I bet this new coach, I mean, the reason they wanted him in there was he was the anti-Philbin. He was
right.
Mr. Fire. And I thought that sort of thing could, at the very least, get them fired up enough to take out that first game. So we'll just have to see how long they can keep it going. If that's something that's going to be a pattern that we see, or his whole thing is going to take hold, or is this just sort of he got them fired up for that one game, but maybe there's deeper issues with this team. We'll just have to see.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and we'll be back with your week 7 minute picks. So stay tuned.
Okay, to rhyme that way, you be POWMIA, and I'm 7 steps ahead of you, 5 from eternity.
And we are back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. It is week 7 of the 2015 National Football League season, and it is time for us to make our minute picks.
Minute picks. Sorry.
Our minute picks, of course, you can use them for whatever purposes, entertainment, non-entertainment, or whatever. What you do with them is not...
It's your decision.
It's up to you. Let's start, of course, with tonight's game. Thursday night, the Seattle Seahawks are at the rival San Francisco 49ers. Because this game is tonight, and I don't know how many of y'all will be listening in before kickoff, I'm just going to go with the Seattle Seahawks here. I think that the Niners will play a pretty tough game, considering this is their biggest rival, their biggest divisional rival. They've got the home field advantage. But, after Seattle losing to Carolina last week and just looking at what Seattle has on offense and defense versus what San Francisco has and how they're able to execute, Seattle can't execute very well, but they do a better job of it than the Niners. So I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
Yeah, I think I like the Seahawks in this spot. Coming off a tough loss, they've since Sunday, that's been that narrative that ooh, Seattle's only got 2 wins. Are they done? They're not what they used to be, which is true. I don't think they're quite as good as they were for whatever reason.
They absolutely aren't.
I don't just mean results wise. I just mean like what I see on the field.
No, they're definitely not.
There's some issues there. But I think San Francisco's issues are much deeper. Despite Kaepernick having a pretty decent week over the last couple of weeks, I still think San Francisco has quite a few problems. I think this should be an interesting low-scoring game with Seattle the victor.
Moving on to Sunday, we've got the London game, 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. Buffalo Bills are at the home team, Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, every week we're waiting for the Jaguars to turn that corner because, again, you know, there's a lot going for them on offense and defense, but it's much more it's more like it's going for them on paper when you look at the roster versus what is being done on the field. You know, being the home team in London and anything is possible in this situation, maybe Jacksonville can pull off the win, especially when we're talking about E.J. Manuel as the Bills quarterback. But Buffalo still has that defense, and, I mean, they're missing some guys right now. There are a lot of guys injured on offense and defense for Buffalo, which could make things a little bit difficult for them. But I'm going to go with the Bills here.
Yeah, I mean, this just gets back to the Jaguars. And, like, you know, it seems like every year, every week, every year, I just, you know, keep waiting. They seem like they're getting better, and then they still lose. And, you know, that happened again last week, I believe, didn't it? Or no, did they win? Did they beat? No. No, they didn't. They lost. So that's, you know, typical. So I'll just say the same thing. Buffalo.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are at Washington. Tampa Bay coming off of a much-needed bye week to try to get things in correct working order on both offense and defense. Washington's been kind of a surprisingly competent team, even though Kirk Cousins has looked like hot garbage as of late,
yeah.
Which is kind of ridiculous because when you look at what Jay Gruden is saying and the excuses that he's making for Cousins versus the way that he so willingly threw RG3 under the bus last year, it's very, let's just say, it's very conspicuous. It's a little concerning to me. I think Washington will win this game. I don't trust Tampa Bay on the road this year. I don't think it's going to be that much of like a blowout or anything, but I think Washington can get this win.
Yeah. I don't know. Can I pick this as the least watchable game this week?
Sure, but you still have to pick who you think is going to win.
All right, Washington.
Next up in the early afternoon slate, we've got the Atlanta Falcons at the Tennessee Titans. As we discussed earlier, Marcus Mariota not practicing on Thursday, looking less likely to go. It'll be Zach Mettenberger at quarterback if that is continues to be the case. You know, Atlanta, they got handed their first loss of the season. They're now 5-1 on the year, but they're still a very good team. You know, everything to me is trending upwards for them on offense and defense since making those coaching changes. You know, Tennessee, they struggle to stop the run. You know, they're a little bit stronger up front on defense than I had expected, but I think Atlanta can go into Tennessee and win this game.
Does it feel like Tennessee's been at home for every game this year? I mean, I know they played Tampa on the road, but I feel like since then they've been at home.
Yeah.
I don't know. Regardless, I think that they could give them a hard time. Tennessee could, but I don't know. This, I mean, Atlanta's definitely the better team here, I think. God, I don't know.
And you're just sitting here just sighing and pausing, God, I don't know.
Was in Atlanta until you said that. So then I was definitely going to pick Atlanta, but then, you know, I think they could potentially give them a hard time. But I'll
you're a lot of hemming and hawing out of Brian this week in the picks. New Orleans Saints are at the Indianapolis Colts. Indianapolis wants to bounce back from that loss against the Patriots and also wipe the taste of that bad so-called fake punt play call out of their mouths. You know, New Orleans, I think, is a good team for them to be able to get this bounce back win. There's going to be those attendant issues we're always going to have with the Colts. They're not going to be able to protect Andrew Luck. They're not going to run the ball very well. They're not going to be that great on and that aggressive on defense. But I think that they can do enough to pull out this win because they're at home. You know, the Saints are not as scary as they've been in the past. You know, I think there are ways that the Saints can absolutely pull out this win, but my gut is leaning Colts. I'm going to go Colts.
Even when the Saints were, like, you know, on the top of their stuff a few years ago, you know, they weren't always the same team when they were on the road.
Hey, they haven't been the same team at home this year either.
This year they haven't been the same team at home even. So,
or last year.
No, I think this is a good situation for Indianapolis to pick up a win outside of the AFC South.
The Minnesota Vikings are...
And I think that they're going to run that fake punt again and do it right this time.
I don't think so because it's an illegal play. You can't run it in the NFL. Minnesota Vikings are at the Detroit Lions. Detroit got their first win of the season. Can they stack a second? You know, Adrian Peterson is constantly a problem for this Detroit defense, but he's not really been running the way that he has in the past, nor the way that we all expected to this year. You know, come in with that chip on the shoulder, have that season essentially off because he was on the commissioner's exempt list and all that. Detroit, meanwhile, you know, they've got a lot going for them personnel-wise, but they can't execute. And it's to the point where it's becoming kind of ridiculous. I think Detroit is going to win this game because I like the home field advantage here, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do something to shoot themselves in the foot yet again, because we've seen it all season long.
Yeah, definitely the Lions need to figure out a way to stay out of their own way. And I agree with you. I think with the history of Adrian Peterson in Detroit, stomping all over the line, well, playing against Detroit, stomping all over the Lions, I mean, I probably would normally lean that way, but Norvell is doing something weird with this offense. I think the Lions offensive line took a step forward last week, and I think that bodes well. I guess I'll reluctantly pick the Lions.
Next up, the Pittsburgh Steelers are at the Kansas City Chiefs. As we discussed earlier, it'll be Landry Jones at quarterback for the Steelers, with, of course, Alejandro Villanueva at left tackle. Meanwhile, the Kansas City Chiefs don't have much of an offense to speak of now that Jamaal Charles is out for the year with a torn ACL. Pittsburgh's defense, should be noted, held the Arizona Cardinals' top scoring offense to 13 points last week. They were averaging 38 points per game. And then you have this Chiefs offense that is nowhere near the quality of Arizona's. The Chiefs could make things difficult, as we talked earlier, for Landry Jones with that pass rush. But I think ultimately the Steelers go into here and get a win, particularly because their defense is playing much better than Kansas City's defense. And their offense just has way more ways to score points than Kansas City's, regardless of how much pressure they bring on Jones.
Yeah, I think that this is a good matchup for Pittsburgh's defense. You know, they've been more stout against the run than the pass. But, you know, we know what Kansas City's issues are with the pass offense. So.
And now they have issues with the running offense, without Charles.
And they lost Jamaal Charles. So I think this sets up for a road win, although it is tough to play in Kansas City, but I'll pick the Steelers here.
Cleveland Browns are at the St. Louis Rams. The St. Louis Rams have 19 sacks on defense this year. Cleveland Browns, meanwhile, struggling a little bit in pass protection, but I have to say Josh McCown is handling pressure much better this year than he did last year in Tampa Bay. If the Browns can get the football out of McCown's hands, I think they do have enough offensive weaponry, Gary Barnes, Travis Benjamin, Duke Johnson, all these different guys, that they could get things done against St. Louis. On the other hand, St. Louis has Todd Gurley. You know, the Cleveland Browns are giving up over 150 rushing yards per game on average. This game is in St. Louis. It's not going to be a heavily attended game. But again, it is still in St. Louis. I think that the Browns have the ability to win this game, but I think St. Louis is going to pull it off.
Yeah, I'll just go ahead.
It's that run defense,
man. I'll keep it short and sweet. I think the Browns are going to, again, play a competitive game, be close. It'll be close towards the end, and then
the offense
lose.
Will keep it competitive, and the defense will screw it up.
Well,
the play calling will screw it up.
I don't know
who's going to go for two when they should.
I don't know who's going to screw it up, but I'm banking on somebody doing it.
The Houston Texans are at the newly rejuvenated Miami Dolphins. You know, after you look at Miami going into Tennessee last week and winning 38-10, it does seem like they got some new life by making that head coaching change. Meanwhile, Houston. You know, they're sticking with Brian Hoyer at quarterback. He has proven over the last 2 weeks to be the more solid option. So perhaps the quarterback controversy there has been kind of squashed finally. But I think that Miami's got a lot going for it. They've got, like I said, they've got that rejuvenated mentality. They're the home team here. Houston's not very good all around. So I'm going to go with the Dolphins.
I think we're going to look back at the end of the season and say that Bill O'Brien messed up when he pulled Hoyer in the first place.
Yeah, I think so.
And they should have just stuck with him the whole time.
You can't. Two quarterbacks, you have none, et cetera.
I still don't think Hoyer's that great, but I think he's probably a little better than Mallett right now. But all that being said, they're going to Miami, and I think this is a good situation for Dan Campbell to keep the magic going, being at home against a struggling Houston team.
Next, the final game of the early afternoon slate on Sunday, the New York Jets travel to Foxborough to take on the undefeated Patriots. I think the Jets are going to bring it to the Patriots here. You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick has actually been playing pretty good football. Jets have a good defense. They have a very good run game led by Chris Ivory. This is a rivalry that, you know, regardless of Rex Ryan not being there anymore, they're going to be playing this game pretty tough, and I think that they're going to keep it close. But ultimately, when you've got Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, you know, Gronkowski, you put all these things together, and it's in Foxborough, I think it's just going to end up being, you know, it's just going to be a little too much. I think they're going to get out-coached. I don't necessarily think they will be outplayed pound for pound, yard for yard, but I think they'll be out-coached. I'm going to go with the Patriots.
Yeah, I think the Jets are surprisingly a lot better this year, we've seen, than I was expecting to begin the season.
Sure.
They're definitely one of the surprises of the league. I think that they're gonna you know, go up there and give them a tough game. But I have no reason to pick against the Patriots right now until I see a reason to. And I've seen nothing of the sort yet. They're humming. They're firing on all cylinders. And I think that they get it done this Sunday.
We have only two games in the late afternoon this week. First up, the Oakland Raiders are at the San Diego Chargers. Both Oakland and San Diego, have shown signs of being, you know, very, you know, good to competent this year, but both teams are capable of getting got.
Mm-hmm.
And what I see from this game is a shootout. I see passing and passing and passing and passing. And it's going to be a matter of who can get things done and who can get stops in the red zone and in the end zone. I'm giving the edge to San Diego here only because I like what's going on with Phillip Rivers to Antonio Gates, plus Phillip Rivers to Ladarius Green. You know, they're hoping that Keenan Allen will be good to go here. Phillip Rivers to Keenan Allen, Phillip Rivers throwing and not just handing off to Danny Woodhead. All of these things, I think, are going to be pretty difficult for Oakland to defend against. So I'm going to go with the home team Chargers.
This actually seems like a pretty fun game.
This is going to be fun. I think this is going to
be fun.
It smells like a shootout to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this is going to be fun.
Where is it?
It is in San Diego.
In San Diego, yeah. I think that Oakland might have a chance if they're at home, but being down at the bottom of the state there, I think I'm going to give it to San Diego.
Next up in the late afternoon, NFC East matchup, Dallas Cowboys at the New York Giants. Still no Tony Romo, still no Dez Bryant. Slowly but surely, those two guys are working their way through rehab and eventually should make it back on the field this year. New York Giants, you know, they looked pitiful, you know, in their night game in week six. A lot of turnovers, Eli Manning doing that bad Eli kind of thing that he's been known to do. But I think that they can get this bounce back this week. We're, you know, it's not a national spotlight game at night. It's in the new Meadowlands. You know, Dallas has all of its issues they're dealing with right now. You know, with some of these guys they've gotten back on defense, they could really kind of mess with Eli Manning a little bit. But I think he's going to learn from his mistakes, and we're going to get good Eli after we just got bad Eli.
I think that's a fair rationale.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of how it works, right?
I'm going to go with Dallas. And I have really not much reason why, other than that I don't know. It's just the NFC East. I'm just going to keep mixing it up every week.
Speaking of the NFC East, on Sunday night, the NFC East Philadelphia Eagles travel to Carolina to take on the undefeated Panthers. I think that, you know, Philadelphia is going to take it to Carolina a little bit. You know, they got that high-tempo offense. Sometimes they can really get things going. Sometimes they can't. I think it's going to be tough sledding for a guy like DeMarco Murray, though, against this Carolina defensive front. And, you know, we talked about it earlier. Like, Cam is doing a lot with not a lot of weapons, you know, at his disposal. And I think that Carolina, you know, I think they're going to prove on a national scale, like, hey, we're undefeated for a reason, and we're going to stay that way. I'm going with the Panthers.
Yeah, this being in Carolina, I think that this sets up really tough for the Eagles, who have been struggling to get that high-tempo offense running correctly.
On a consistent basis.
On a consistent basis, yeah. You see it, like, flare up here and there in the game, and then, like, you know, something happens. It stalls out, if you will. So Bradford especially, he's had moments of looking good and moments of what was that. And DeMarco Murray finally had a decent game, I think, last week. But, you know, to going against that Carolina defense is going to be really tough. They're humming. They're at home. It's Sunday night. I'm on Carolina as well.
Finally, Monday Night Football. The Baltimore Ravens travel to take on the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona coming off of that loss last week to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think they're going to bounce back in a big way here. I mean, we're talking about a very explosive, high-scoring offense against a Baltimore Ravens defense that can't really do much of anything right now. You know, they're trying on offense. Steve Smith's out there with four fractures in his back, catching footballs and doing crazy things. You know, Flacco's got a trio of tight ends, two rookies, one of them being Max Williams, and of course Crockett Gilmore, and there's Kamar Aiken and Marlon Brown, and these guys trying to pick up the slack, but it's just not coming together in the way that the Ravens hoped. They're not looking like they did last year. And Arizona is just going to be, I think, such a difficult test for them. I don't see the Ravens going out there and winning. I'm going to go with the Cardinals.
It just doesn't feel right to just keep saying like, yeah, there's, you know, I don't see Baltimore this week.
Just
you know
broken.
What I mean? Yeah, I know. It feels crazy to me, but I mean, with that, I mean, this is Carson Palmer and, you know, he's been lighting it up this season, you know, throwing at Larry Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald's been catching everything, and we've seen what this Baltimore defense can do. It makes other quarterbacks look better, and it's kind of hard to pick against Arizona in this situation. So,
yeah, Baltimore to me is one of the more surprising disappointments of the season. You knew that things were going to be different. You bring in Mark Trestman to be the offensive coordinator, but it didn't seem on paper that it would be that much different than what Gary Kubiak did last year. And you had Joe Flacco and a lot of people saying it's really not that much different. You know, they lost Terrell Suggs on defense. And the injury bug has again been bothering them in the secondary like it did last year. But I just didn't see this coming. And I think not having Breshad Perriman out there, the round one draft pick, the receiver that's supposed to take over Torrey Smith's deep threat role, has really set them back. But it's really surprising to me what's become of Baltimore this year.
They get Pitta back, you said?
He is back practicing, but he's not playing.
Back.
Oh,
yeah.
He is nowhere near playing yet. He's not even counting against the 53 yet. He has 3 weeks to make that decision.
This will eventually get worked out for them, I think.
I don't know if it'll get worked out this year, but it will get worked out.
I think even maybe later in the year they'll figure some things out and maybe just be kicking some teams out of the playoffs, that sort of thing.
We'll have to see. I mean, we're about that the halfway point for Baltimore right now, and it just seems to be getting worse before it gets better.
I can't see them making a run of the playoffs at this point. So,
no.
But I think they could potentially get better and be that spoiler at the end of the season. But
so those are our Week 7 Minute Picks here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Do with them as you will, as we say every week. And hopefully they bring you great joy and
you should all bet lots of money on our picks because
don't listen to him.
Because that makes lots of sense.
Don't listen to him. Never listen to Brian.
I wasn't being sarcastic at all.
We'll be back at the F-Ball NFL Podcast to send y'all home, so just stay tuned a couple more minutes.
My squad hangs out like 400 pounds in Brazil. My death row aligns be assigned in a line to electric, so it flare like a chair in Texas. Hot. Approach with extreme caution. No horsing around with my squad abortion and sound. I cruise like Smokey off Soaky. Even Luke Bo Peep, your style is weak, Gargiroli. With all the ice in it, I slash the ice out, put a price out, cop a biz, put my mom's in it. As long as I'm alive, I'ma keep the vibe. 24/7, 365. I need your full cooperation and total attention. There's a few things I like.
Well, that about wraps everything up this week on the Week 7 2015 season edition of the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
It was an honor and a pleasure.
It's always an honor and a pleasure to be your listening choice here this week and any week and every week that you decide to tune in or download or stream our wonderful podcast. We, of course, appreciate each and every one of our listeners. I'm your host. My name is Andrea Hengst. I cover the Cleveland Browns and Pittsburgh Steelers for BleacherReport.com. Cover the Cleveland Browns, some salary cap stuff, some AFC North stuff, all kinds of things for Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report. And I cover the entire National Football League for SportsOnEarth.com. You can find me on Twitter at FBall.com. That's FBALL_Andrea. And you can hear me tomorrow morning on Bleacher Report Sirius XM Satellite Radio at 10 a.m. Central Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. That's Friday morning. So if you can, tune in.
Yeah. And I'm Brian. I'm the co-host of this podcast as well as the executive senior producer of the podcast.
Yes.
And I can be found elsewhere on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Again, thanks to all of you for tuning in and listening to the F-Ball NFL podcast this week. Enjoy the Week 7 slate of games, and we will be back next week to talk about what happened in Week 7, preview Week 8, because we're headed towards the halfway point of the 2015 season, and we hope you tune in then as well. So, again, thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Later.
Peace. Cooperation, the total attention. There's a few things I like to mention. These rappers out here swear they so appealing. I accept your business and hurt your feelings. That was full cooperation by the Death Squad crew. And this is Dave Rockin' Real coming to you once again on WDW.